third. All right, I started to deal with something last week, and I really want to go into it earnestly this week. And it has to do with partly the founding of the American Republic. And again, we're dealing with both Bible and history at this 1 o'clock. Of course, we dealt with Bible and history somewhat at the 11 o'clock today. Just to understand things better. And my kids know that I am a prolific reader of history and just always reading history. Tim just got done reading a book I'd read some years ago, William Pitt Jr., and Prime Minister of England at 24 years of age, and spent his entire life as Prime Minister, died in his mid-40s as a broken old man. And just fascinating. His father had been the great Lord Chatham Pitt of American fame, Pittsburgh, Pittsfield, and those places. And in fact, Tim now has got my 3-volume set on British history from 1877 that I paid $95 for back in 1991. And, you know, reading through that. But I'm always reading history, going through this, going through that. And, of course, I also read Bible. So one of the things I rarely do is read religious books. It's not that I never do, but I rarely do. I rather just read history books, things that are done by the world, and use my Bible to discern what's being said.
Amen.
Okay? And that doesn't mean I don't read any religious books. I'd be hypocritical. I've written religious books, all right? So I don't want to discourage people from reading religious books. Okay? But in Daniel chapter 3, we'll look at this again. And I want to get into this idea, when do you stand against the king? When do you say, no, I will not obey the government? So Daniel chapter 3, verse 28. Daniel chapter 3, verse 28. This comes after they've thrown Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted him, have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. So we see here three men who became famous because they just outright disobeyed the king. Most people who disobey the king go to jail. Okay? These men were given reverence and honor. Now, a number of things had to happen. One, they had to have God back them up. But if you're familiar with the story, when they told the king they would not do what he said, they said, if we die, we die. So right off the bat, if you think you have something so important, if you need to go against the government, you need to be willing to die for it. If you're not willing to die, it's not real. To be honest with you, that's actually part of the understanding in the United States. Now, we're going to go back a little bit to a man by the name of John Bunyan, which most of you have heard of. He wrote the book called Pilgrim's Progress. He wrote a book that I personally love, Grace Abounding to the Chief of Sinners. He wrote another book called The Holy War, wrote a lot of children's poetry. A lot of people don't realize how many books he really wrote. But again, John Bunyan was a tinkerer. Now, a tinkerer was a man who welded and mended pots and pans. That's what he did. So he would come with his donkey or horse into town, and there'd be all these pots and pans clanging. He'd come into town. You might have an old pot or pan that's got a hole in it now, and the tinkerer would weld and fix that. That's what he did. And he began to going to a house of dissenters. Now, dissenters were people who were going to church, but they weren't going to the king's church. And in most of Europe, it was felt that you were dishonoring the king if you didn't go to the church he went to. Now, let's say, for example, the Fords got ready to go to church, and Autumn said, no, folks, I want to go to the Catholic church. Well, Dad's not going to put up with that. You live in my house, okay? later on, when she's an adult, if she wants to do that, he put up with that, okay? He's not going to disown her because she made a different decision. But while you're in his house, this is the way it's going to be. So that is in our house. If you live in our house, you're going to be at every service at the Black Creek Baptist Church, okay? So it was felt in those days that if you lived in the kingdom, you went to church where the king went to church. And there was something very disloyal about you if you didn't. So John Bunyan began going to a dissenter church. It was a little Anabaptist church. They believed in adult baptism. And Mr. Gifford was the pastor there. And he would preach. And then the day came when Mr. Gifford had to leave. And the people of the church felt that this tinkerer had a gift from God and he should be the next one to begin speaking. And so Bunyan began to be the one who would read that Bible and he would preach to the people in that church. And the problem was, it was illegal to have a little home church, just like it is in China today. Okay? It's illegal to have that. So the day came when the sheriff came and people came to Bunyan and said, you need to flee, you need to run. The sheriff is coming to arrest you. And he said, no, I will not run. This is where I'm supposed to be. So number one, what did he do? He yielded his body. Okay. He yielded his body. And the sheriff came and arrested him. And as far as the English court system was concerned, it was a slam dunk affair. Okay? He's guilty. You know, what do we do about this? He's preaching. He has no license. He has no right to preach. But the judge who listened to him realized, gosh, this tinker, certainly an earnest man, and he spoke well for himself, and the judge had respect to him. And he said, Mr. Bunyan, he said, the king is of late has agreed that certain churches can get a license from the king and that they can continue in practice. And he said, I put in a good word for you. And Bunyan said, I will take no license from the king. Okay? He said, if I take a license and I take permission to preach, then I'm agreeing that you have the right to make me stop. And you have no right to make me stop. Well, keep in mind, a judge back in the 1600s, he might as well have told him he's going to put a beanie on and fly to Mars. It's just ridiculous. And he's actually, the judge is actually quoted as saying, I suppose that's the last we'll ever hear from Mr. John Bunyan. And he just remanded him to the jail until such time as he agreed to either take a license or quit preaching. It was up to him. Bunyan is recorded as having told the guards, if you should see me yield, and if you be my friend, please put a knife in me, okay? He would sleep on his hands and knees during the winter because the cold cobblestones, you'd get pneumonia and die. They would bring his blind daughter to the jail and have her beg her father to change his mind. And he wrote at one point, oh, you, I couldn't stand to see a drop of rain touch you. And now you beg for your food in the streets, okay? And so what did it cost Bunyan to do that? In jail is what he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. Eventually, the government of England changed. He was let out for a period of time and put back in another governmental change. But it ended up that his little book, Pilgrim's Progress, became the number one book ever sold anywhere in history up until really around the 1950s and 60s when modern printing came out. In colonial United States and in most United States until about 1850 or so, every American household was said to have two books. They had a Bible and they had a copy of Pilgrim's Progress that Bunyan wrote. So what he did with yielding, by giving his body over and saying, they can lock my body up. I'll sit here all these years, altogether 12 years in jail, voluntarily, where at any point he can sign a piece of paper and leave. Okay? Imagine the guys in jail, they could sign a piece of paper and get out. And he could sign that piece of paper, but he didn't. And when it was over, he broke the king. He broke the laws of England. He, in other words, broke their willpower. Since that time, all Baptist churches have licensed their own preachers. Now, if we license a preacher, all we're doing is giving him permission to preach. Okay? We're going to let him experiment. We licensed Dale, it turned out well. We licensed Bryson, and it didn't turn out so well, okay? But again, that's what we do. That's an experiment. How is this person gonna do? Similar to a driving permit, okay? Put them out there, see how they do. Dale, until such time as if, you know, he joins the church in Rochester, wants to change his licensing, he's out there, and this church says, hey, no government will ever license Dale Moore, okay? God has put his hand on him, God's called him to preach, and we wrote the license for him to preach. We're the ones that did that. Why? Because a man by the name of John Bunyan, 350 years ago, gave his own body for 12 years to sit in jail to win that right, okay? Now, what else happened? Well, another one that happened was when Baptists first began to come to the come to the colonies. We often look at the Pilgrims, and to be honest with you, they really were a wonderful group of people. Mr. Robinson, who'd been their leader, never left Holland. He stayed there. He's one of the founding fathers of America and was never in America. But he's the one who got them to go and sail and corresponded with them the entire time and everything of that sort. And when the Pilgrims got to the Plymouth Plantation and they established their colony there, we think to ourselves, well, they must have wanted religious freedom. Well, one of the first things they did is they banned Christmas. You went to jail if you celebrated Christmas. They banned figgy pudding, all right? They banned the maypole. They thought that was pagan. All right? You got a maypole, you went to jail as far as the Pilgrims go. And they outlawed adult baptism, okay? They did not want anyone coming in there not baptizing their own children. And if you were somebody who practiced adult baptism, you were expelled from the colony. If you came back to the colony, it was the death penalty. At one point, after they put a couple of men to death, the King of England protested about it, and they wrote back and said, they do but run upon the sword. We hold the sword up, and they run upon it and kill themselves. We told them to leave, not come back here again. And they came back, all right? So this idea of religious liberty is not something that came easily in the United States. So what ended up happening is some of these Baptists left and crossed over to Rhode Island, that state now today, the smallest of all the United States. It was a little sea area with a couple little islands and things there, and they got a charter for a colony, and they established something that had hitherto been unknown on the earth, and that was religious toleration. The idea that there was to be no religious test in that colony for being able to live there, for being able to build a church, for being able to do any of those things. So for example, one of the books I used to treasure, I ended up giving it to a converted Jew, but I used to have a book called The History of Jews in the United States, written in the 1930s, written for Jewish private schools. And they talk about the first synagogues ever built in the United States. Where? Rhode Island. And in that book, they didn't know why. They just said, we don't know why those people allowed us to build synagogues and nobody else would. They're Baptists, okay? They don't believe in a religious test. These Jews could build a synagogue. It doesn't mean they agreed with the Jews, okay? That they allowed them to do that. Now, in Massachusetts, what ended up happening was as the Pilgrim colony ended up getting joined together with the Massachusetts Bay colony. It used to be two different colonies, Plymouth Plantation, Massachusetts Bay. They were combined together. If you ever look, you'll see it'll say Massachusetts Bay, Plymouth Plantation. And they were combined together, which the Pilgrims thought that would be, they were being traded on with that. But regardless, it happened. And slowly, Massachusetts began to allow dissenters. What's that mean? They began to allow people from other churches to at least be there to build church houses. But they had a problem. They had a state church. What's that mean? Well, people here, anybody ever get a school tax in the mail where you get your bill for school taxes? Okay? What happens if you don't pay them? They're going to come take your land away. Well, when you had a state church, you got two bills in the mail. You got a school tax and you got a church tax. Under the church tax, you were going to pay it. And you're going to pay it, and if you don't, they're going to take your land away. So what ended up happening is there was a man by the name of Isaac Backus who ended up getting saved and born again. And it's a tremendous story, saved during the Great Awakening. And he began to struggle with this idea of becoming a Baptist. Baptists had a terrible name. And they were just seemed so radical and so out of the way. And he finally writes and says this. He said, I finally realized that the only part of me that didn't want to be a Baptist was my flesh. That everything else in the Bible agreed a man should be a Baptist, but my flesh hated the idea, and I realized anything my flesh hated that bad, I should do, all right? And so he became, he's really the founder of what was called regular Baptists. Baptists who just out there on their own, they don't have anything fancy or special to them. He began to write prolifically about, you know, how Baptists ought to live and make it more acceptable. But one of the things of Baptists in Massachusetts, they quit paying their school tax. They protested. What did that mean? It means that one day the sheriff came and evicted them from their farms. I mean, the day came that you're standing there and you're a farmer out there and you're out in the street. It's not yours anymore, okay? It was taken away from them and they don't have it anymore. What did it mean to them to separate church and state? It meant poverty. It meant giving up everything. Anybody here want to give up their home? Anybody here want to give up all that they have for a principle? That's what they did. It's interesting because they appealed to King George III of England, who after many years restored all their properties to them. And overrode as the total Supreme Court. So King George III, the same one we rebelled against, agreed with them and restored all their properties. It's fascinating because amongst all the colonies, one third of the Catholics, one third of the Methodists, one third of the Presbyterians, one third of the Episcopalians, one third of the Jews were for independence. One third of the Catholics, one third of the Methodists, one third of the Episcopalians, one third of the Presbyterians were for the England. One third of all the others were in between. Amongst the Baptists, it was over 80% that sided with independence. Why? Because they were a people principled out of the Word of God. And they understood what was here. And these are even people who that very king restored their lands to them. Okay? Knowing that if we go for independence, these people may take all our lands away again. So it gives you an idea that if you understand to be a Baptist for many years has been one and one with being a patriot. But again, I want to go into this difference between nationalism and patriotism. For example, in Serbia and Croatia. Now, not so much now, but during the Clinton presidency, it was a big problem. Serbs and Croatians killed each other. They hated each other. You know what the difference in a Serb and a Croatian is? One of them's Roman Catholic, the other one's Russian Orthodox. They speak the exact same language, but they write it in two different alphabets. One of them says the sign of the cross with three fingers, the other says it with two fingers. They would actually go out there and mutilate bodies after they killed them to make them say the sign of the cross the right way and things. I mean, a bitter, awful hatred. Why? Because of a national pride over I'm a Serbian. I'm a Croat. I don't ever want to have that kind of pride for America. Okay? My love for this country needs to be based on the fact that it is a place of law. It is a place of firm rules that we have all agreed on together. Where anyone from any country can come here and live here by these laws and they can excel and do well, okay? And I'll die for that. But I'm not going to die for its rocks and rills, and I'm not going to die for... And understand, I do love its rocks and rills, and I love, you know, America. I love all that, but I'm not going to die for that. I'm not going to kill other people for that. But I will die for your rights. I will die for those things, those principles that this country stands for. That's patriotism as versus nationalism. Those words are mixed up today, but historically they were never mixed up, okay? Watch out for people who are only nationalist. You want people who stand for something, who believe in something. What they believe in is right. And they can envision anyone of any color, any nationality coming in and living under those laws. You know, one of the sad things is, for example, let's use Italians, for example. They never flourished in Italy. Italy was always a place of absolute poverty and just degradation. And yet those people came here living under our laws, became great people. Why? Because it was in them to do that. They just needed to live under a system where that could happen. Okay? And people from all these different cultures and nations from all over the world coming under and living under this system, there's that chance to be lifted up. There's that chance to be able to do that. And I love that. And again, that's what I've raised my sons and my daughter, and I want my grandchildren to be willing to die for that. Okay? Those principles for which we stand. Okay? The republic for which we stand. There's a Supreme Court case. Now, I want you to understand this. There was a Supreme Court case somewhere about 25 years ago in which the Hopi Indians of New Mexico were being arrested for using peyote. Now, let me tell you something. Peyote's not something you want to mess with, okay? Peyote comes out of a cactus, you eat it, and you will meet Mescalito, all right? The god of the Indians. You will meet him, all right? And so the thing is, the Hopi Indians were arrested for that, and they sued and said, we have a constitutional right to eat peyote, mescaline, mescalito, okay? You say, well, where's that constitutional right? You know what they proved before the Supreme Court? Before the first white men ever stepped on the North American shores, the Hopi Indians had used peyote in their ceremonies, and they had used it in their religion. And that there was no power in the United States government to take that away from them. You know what? The Supreme Court agreed. So if Tim and I went and ate mescaline, we're going to go to jail. Okay? But if you grew up a Hopi Indian and you grew up under that religion, there's no power in the United States of America. Congress shall have no power, no power over a man's religion. For example, during the Prohibition, Catholics never stopped using wine. Why? Because there was no power in the United States of America to take wine away from them. The government of the United States shall have no power to do this. That's what the First Amendment says. They couldn't do that. But I couldn't walk up and take wine because it wasn't my religion to do that. You understand that difference? Now here's where the practical thing comes in. There is a ruling called Yoder versus the state of Wisconsin. And to be honest with you, it's some of the best case law you'll ever read. And at one point when I was establishing my church in Vermont, I had to get used to this and such because I decided not to incorporate the church. And I worked with the IRS how to establish it and such without it being incorporated. And they sent the rules for what a church had to be. And they're based on Wisconsin out of the, versus Yoder. Yoder was an Amish man who wouldn't send his children to public school. State of Wisconsin passed a law that there were no exemptions for that. This is long before homeschooling became a practice. Yoder still wouldn't yield. They came and said, we'll take your children away and we'll put you in jail. He still wouldn't yield, and eventually they took his children away and they put him in jail. So here's this common Amish man sitting in jail, and his children now living like the normal world out there. And he lost in the Wisconsin Supreme Court because the law was steadfast. It's over. It's done. The United States Supreme Court disagreed, and here's what they said. They said there is no power in any government to coerce a man against his religion. They said, how do we know when a man's really religious and when he's faking? For example, in 1967, LSD was made illegal. Up until then, Janis Joplin and Chris Christopherson and such, and Jerry Garcia, they'd throw LSD out in their concerts for people to eat while they're, and it was legal. 1967, it was made illegal. So the hippies tried to turn it into a sacrament. Was it a sacrament before it was illegal? Okay? Not that you had a long use of that. Here's what the Supreme Court said. They said, in order for a religious exemption to be there, it must be a sincerely held belief. What more could this man do to show you it was sincere than to sit in jail and let his children be taken away? What more could he do, America, than sit there and yield his own body and let his whole home be destroyed because a principle meant more to him? And the United States Supreme Court said there's no power in the state of Wisconsin to make him send his children to public school. They have no power to do that. Yoder versus the state of Wisconsin. Now, here's how the IRS, and to be honest with you, I think it's brilliant. I think it's some of the greatest thinking America has, and it comes out of the IRS. Here's what their thinking is. If you wanted to establish a church, let's say that Charity's sick of all this, Sam's just a jerk, and she wants to go start her own cult somewhere, whatever else, and you know, in order to be a part of the church, you have to bring her donuts and money, all right? And so this is what she wants to do. And you know, now she wants tax exempt for this. A, they want to know, was this legal when you started it? Or did you start something only because it became illegal, okay? For example, the hippies trying to make LSD into a sacrament, okay? Was it legal when you started it? The next thing they want to know, is it a sincerely held belief? And they have many ways that they look at people to try to determine, is this sincerely held belief? If it is, the IRS will grant it church status, okay? What they told me was this. They actually sent me a certificate. Yes, you are a church. And they said, you don't need this for us. This only helps your donors. What's that mean? It means, for example, if you're trying to keep track of your donations to this church, you tell Ashley and she writes down at the end of the year how much you donated because you intend to write this off on your taxes. What if the IRS says, we never heard of the Black Creek Baptist Church? And they come to check, is there really a Black Creek Baptist Church, okay? Well, it'd be easy here. We're incorporated under the laws of the state of New York. We don't have a 501c national incorporation. Incorporated under the laws of the state of New York, a long history here. So because I'm starting a brand new church and there is no history there, I just told the IRS what I was doing. They looked at it, sent me a thing, yes you are. That way, if so, let's say somebody, and by the way, somebody did donate an airplane one time. So they donate an airplane, and then they try to write off their taxes the airplane. The IRS says, well, you never heard of this. Oh, they're on file. They really are a sincerely held belief. We don't care what the belief is, but it's sincerely held, and it's not illegal. All right, they're not trying to hide crimes or anything of that sort. Yield unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Yield unto God what is God's. There have never been on the face of this earth any group of people who have ever figured that out more carefully than the Baptists have. Baptists have made a lot of mistakes. They're not perfect. But no group of people has ever, in yielding themselves to be put in jail, yielding themselves to be destroyed, more wrought a change in their government than the Baptists. Now, let me give you an example of that. When the United States first got its independence, and here's the Baptists fighting against the very king that restored their lands to them. The United States got its independence, and what the Baptists wanted was to get rid of church and state. That was one of their goals. So when the federal Constitution was being written, and by this time, we're dealing with, you know, 15 years after Lexington and Concord, and many years, 7 or 8 years after the final end of the American War of Independence, they argued for the idea that there should not be any state church in America. Patrick Henry disagreed. Patrick Henry's one of those men like Edmund Burke, who has some great, brilliant things he says, but overall, he's kind of a nut. And he just was, if you follow Patrick Henry's life. Great, wonderful things. Some of the best things ever said in America. But overall, a little goofy. But Patrick Henry decided there should be four state churches in the United States. The Episcopalians, the Catholics, the Presbyterians, and the Baptists. There should be four state churches. And he came very close to carrying the Constitutional Convention on that. Very close to getting that passed. There was an emergency. Riders were sent out from Philadelphia all over Virginia, Maryland, as far as Massachusetts, down to Georgia, through the Carolinas, begging Baptist churches to pray and fast before God to defeat Patrick Henry. When the key time came, Patrick Henry was too sick to come. And that provision was never passed, and the First Amendment was passed instead. Okay? So there again is this huge difference made in the United States by Baptists, A, who had proved that they were willing with their lives, willing to lose their farms, willing to lose all their livelihood for a principle they believed in. Okay? We established a nation of laws and rules, and I've loved this nation. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. You get rid of that republic for which it stands, that flag means nothing. Right?
That's right.
That flag, you can hang it on anything. It means nothing. It's the republic for which it stands. Those laws, those rules, where we come together and, you know, I don't agree with Presbyterians. I don't agree with a lot of stuff that goes on in Methodist churches. I don't believe in black Muslims. I don't believe in that stuff. But you know what? We pledge our lives that they have the right to live lawfully amongst us. Not illegally, but lawfully amongst us, okay? That there be no religious test in this country. That there be no establishment of any religion in this country, and that no government in this country has any right whatsoever to tell you what to believe. That's yours to do. I often tell people this. In fact, I said at that Muslim table the other day, and it hit them both, mother and daughter, hard when I said it. I said, I personally believe, and me being able to speak whatever I want, because I believe that in a free discourse of ideas where no government can stop it, that my views will prevail. My enemies want me shut down and they don't want me to have free discourse because they believe the same thing. My views will prevail. Okay? That's exactly why they don't want those things said. Fighting for that right to maintain this church, to maintain what we believe. And again, that's why Paul said you pray for all those in authority that we might worship, that we might be able to do it. I don't know how much longer that'll last. You know, the foundations of this country are being shaken pretty rapidly. Okay? There's prosperity right now. I'm glad of that. No prosperity has ever lasted. And I'll tell you this, the hardest economic crashes come after the greatest economic prosperities. And right now, we're going through one of the greatest economic prosperities this nation's known in a long time. Don't expect people out there to think rationally when the pendulum swings. Don't expect that. You train your family, yourselves, to think rationally, okay? You train your family to be what they ought to be, to respect the laws and order, but also let them know what the bottom line is, things that you'll never change your mind on, things that you'll sit in jail over, things that you'd die first, okay, before you'd ever change your mind on. And don't act like you will if you won't.
Oh, that's good.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't act like you will if you won't. Okay? Dick Ruggles, a man that put your life on the line for this country. Would you close the service in prayer, and Pastor, would you come up?